Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on Cape Talk, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual, a licensed financial services provider. Today's the day. Get great financial advice. Do great things. There is a massive 2,000 Rand to give away in the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening. Not to be sniffed at for you if you are the whiz of the Biz Quiz tonight. Looking forward to you having you play along as we do that at about 10 to 7. Before that, we'll bring you some of the best bits from the week that has been on The Money Show. And it's been big and it's been varied. And it's also been happy and sad all at the same time. So we're reflect some of that in terms of the world of money and business. We'll also bring you market commentary. 2 days of gains, Monday and Tuesday. We hit the 60,000 level. We stuck to it on Tuesday. It was too much to hope for that we would stay there for another 3 days. Market down on the day so far. We'll talk to Andrew Bryson, the portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. And in a moment, the chief executive of Telkom, Sipho Maseko. He's standing by.
The Money Show. On Cape Talk,
your number one news and talk station.
The results from Telkom showing a company that was once a monopoly and had absolutely no competition, feeling the weight of that competition very, very severely. Telkom under huge pressure. Revenues are flat. Profits are down despite a significant improvement in the performance of its mobile operation. Sipho Maseko, Chief Executive of Telkom, on the line to us this evening. Do you think you got the right recipe finally in that Telkom mobile space, Sipho?
Well, I mean, I think, good evening, Bruce, and to your listeners. I think the Telkom mobile business has been doing very well. I think our focus on data, our focus in investing in expanding our broadband network is paying off. We've seen strong growth in mobile broadband, 60% compared to the same period last year, and service revenue overall growing by about 40%. So the recipe is working.
Now, when we look at mobile broadband growing, is that coming at a cost to ADSL? Was ADSL just old school technology that you've struggled to service and that a lot of customers have just got fed up with and are now moving possibly to competitors or maybe going mobile?
I think there would be a bit of that. I mean, the way in which we sell mobile broadband, it's a router. You can probably carry it with you. You can travel around with you. I think there would be a bit of that. And also there's the migration to fiber. For us, the real story here is that the migration from old ADSL-type technology to high-speed broadband, that migration is happening and it's happening fast. And that is why we have elevated our CapEx spend in modernizing our network, especially building out fiber to businesses and to homes.
So is ADSL history?
Well, not quite. I mean, you know, the issue here is around how much money did we spend maintaining the copper network. And I think where we find that our maintenance program over the last couple of years was weak. The quality of the copper is not good enough to carry broadband. And as the use case for broadband begins to grow, copper is not able to carry and give you speeds of up to 20, 30, 40 megabits per second. So we think that over time it will progressively decline to be replaced either by copper or by LTE.
But also you've got massive competition in that broadband space, in the fiber space. Virtually everybody's got a truck on the roads now, either doing mobile broadband or they're doing the fiber optics under the ground. And that is a full private sector assault, fiber assault on Telkom and a market that it could have dominated.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, indeed, we could have. We missed probably about a good 5 years in terms of starting the process of investing in fiber. The competition is there. But, you know, in a perverse way as well, the competition has been very helpful to us because we also have stopped being a sort of lumbering giant that prevailed on being the only game in town. We're learning how to sell better. We're learning how to innovate and bring about new products. We're learning how to bundle those services with things like content. So in a sense, I think the competitive environment has been good for Telkom, actually. And I think in the long run, I can assure you, it's much better for us to be in a competitive environment than being a monopoly in South Africa.
As well, it's good for the environment too, and it's good for all of us. That competitive environment, though, feeling the strain of economic malaise, political uncertainty, Balusi Gigaba in New York talking to foreign investors, saying that they really worried about the state of South Africa's politics and the policy uncertainty that prevails. And it just stops people and companies from spending the sort of money you would like them to spend in terms of upgrading networks, in terms of growing networks.
Well, I mean, we see that. We see it especially in our IT business, BCX, customers deferring spend, in particular, public sector itself, let alone the private sector. So economic uncertainty, political uncertainty, the lack of stability in our overall ecosystem, that has a massive impact in how businesses think about investment. They defer it, they want to see if they can do it next year. The two quarters of technical recession were not helpful. Businesses were tightening up, as were we. And I think that for me, that's why the best response, you can't control the environment. The best response has been we're able to save our own costs. We're able to be a lot more efficient, such that even with revenues that are not growing, we're still able to post a healthy set of profits so that we can be able to give a return to our shareholders.
One of the assets I'd not thought of in terms of Telkom was what must be a pretty vast property empire. And considering how half the number of people work at Telkom today than did, say, 5 years ago, even in small town South Africa, there must be buildings with your name on them, or at least with your name on the title deed. You're wanting to become the country's new big landlord and utilize those assets for a new purpose.
Well, absolutely. Telkom has about 23 million square meters of property. So if you were to aggregate that as a contiguous piece of land, it would be a country slightly larger than Luxembourg. We have properties virtually all over the country, good locations. As the technology has changed and the technology has shrunk, we find that we have excess capacity. And therefore, we thought, how do we unlock value in the long term? How do we partner with developers, either to build offices, to build hotels? And indeed, we'll be a landlord. But we'll do this as well in a very prudent way. It's a long game. We're building up a property team. The new CEO is starting on Monday. We're piloting with about 40 developments for this financial year. And we're really open for business there. We're partnering with quite a number of big property developers and landlords to see what are the things that we can do jointly with them.
I mean, one looks at the success that Tongaat made out of land, out of the moorland business of Tongaat, taking old sugarcane land and turning that into property developments. And you can do that in urban areas with assets that are no longer useful to Telkom shareholders. Will you retain the assets or will you sell some of them?
Well, I mean, it will depend. If other people can unlock value better than we can, obviously we'll sell those assets. But if we believe that we can unlock that value ourselves, ideally would like to retain that value within the group. But what it helps us with as well is that we're gradually building a diversified base of revenue and profitability, so that as it would happen into the future, when the market changes or the environment is foul and one part of the business is affected, other parts of the business will be able to show up in the right way.
How much has government told you about their plans for their stake in Telkom? Do you know who the preferred bidder is? Do you know exactly how much they will sell? What can you tell us about that process?
Yeah, not much, Bruce. I mean, the conversation has been really around the process. Our request, and I think we are aligned with them, is that they will follow a very disciplined process around this. I don't believe they'll dump the shares in the market. I think that they'll follow a very structured process with a much, narrower set of potential buyers. And for us, it doesn't matter who they sell to, as long as the buyers will be able to help advance the strategic objectives of the company. It is not just about people that will hold the shares and bring the dividend. It is large enough, it is strategic enough, and if in their consideration of disposal, it would be our preference. But we never, shareholders, we can never tell them what to do with their shares. They'll do exactly what they like. but at least we are of one mind as to a very disciplined, confidential process that they'll run, so that we don't impact the share price and unsettle the rest of the shareholder base.
I mean, ironically, when the rumours first surfaced of a possible sale of Telkom shares, which government then denied, the share was over 60 Rand. Today it sits at 50 Rand. They're going to have to sell 15% more to achieve their objectives of keeping SAA afloat.
Yeah, that's the tragedy. I mean, that's the tragedy of not managing the propaganda around this properly. The overhang is clearly there. I think there is an anticipation that this was going to be done in a way that is not properly choreographed. But I think in our last interactions with them, where we were seeking some kind of assurance and information, we got a sense that I think they've gotten their act together. Whatever they do, they'll do it in a way that is very responsible and sensible.
Sipho Maseko, Chief Executive of Telkom. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. I mean, Sipho Maseko is Chief Executive of Telkom and Jabu Mabuza is the Chairman. And Jabu Mabuza is a very busy guy. He's also involved with SAB Miller in South Africa. He's been involved for many years in Sohosan, which came out of the trading update today as well. And as Chairman of Telkom and with Sipho Maseko at the helm of the company there running it as an executive, it's been the absolute blueprint of how parastatals should operate. I know it's not a pure parastatal. There's a 39% government stake and the PIC owns another 10 or 11%. But directly and indirectly, government controls Telkom with more than 50%. And if only government would treat the rest of its state-owned enterprises in the way in which it has allowed Telkom the privilege of being treated, professional management with integrity, with transparency, with business brains to rival the rest of the best in the market. The state-owned enterprises would be in far better shape and government wouldn't have to be selling a part of its stake in Telkom, which pays it dividends, which grows its profits on a regular basis, except the last 6 months. But generally, they've been a very, very good asset. And now, 2 months after denying that they were planning to sell the Telkom stake, the share price is 15% lower. They're going to have to sell even more of Telkom to plug the gap at SAF.
The Money Show.
The markets.
Monday was great. Tuesday was fantastic. Wednesday, Thursday and Friday should be forgotten about from a market perspective. But hey, you've got to have some down days after the good ones. Andrew Bryson, a portfolio manager at Sunlum Private Wealth. So much promise at the beginning of the week and ending on a bit of a soggy note, Mr. Bryson.
Yeah, Bruce, a bit of a lackluster end to the week, but I think we can't be too upset. We've certainly had a fantastic run over the last 2 months or so. And then maybe a bit of profit taking coming into these markets at the moment.
Yeah, and so much pressure being brought to bear, I suppose, on locally focused shares where foreigners are big, big, big sellers.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, if just looking outside the top 40 space, if you look in our small and mid caps, they certainly haven't seen the performance that we've got in the overall index. A lot of pressure in that sector.
A huge amount of pressure. And one of the companies that has helped lift the overall index, other than Naspers, has been Richemont, which has had a very, very good year, courtesy of an anticipated better performance following last year's bloodletting, which saw the company, for example, buying back its own watches in order to get itself out of a tight spot. Today, the results from Richemont reflecting a big, big turnaround in its fortunes.
Yeah, I mean, a fantastic set of results. I think even though the price was down, certainly a good set of results. Possibly the market had priced in these numbers, well, and the share looking a bit expensive, so maybe you priced for perfection at some level. But a great set of results, strong sales in the Asia region, as one would expect, and really, really strong cash flows.
Yeah, I mean, Richemont, the luxury goods group, it started off as a cigarette company with Anton Rupert making cigarettes on a machine in the backyard. And that's how all these, it's like Microsoft, just with smoke. Telkom, Sipho Maseko understands the business backwards. He knows what the problems are. He knows the competitive pressures. And Telkom, has it run out of steam? Or is its focus on mobile, the focus on fiber, and breaking away from old school industries going to pay off at some point?
Yeah, look, I think firstly, I mean, it's clearly a very different business to what it was in the past. It's operationally being managed far better. But it's in a difficult environment. I mean, as you alluded to earlier in the interview with the CEO, there's a lot of competition out there, particularly in the fiber space. And I think added to that is corporates are under pressure, or at least they are the confidence, the business confidence is quite low at the moment. So, you know, potentially the spending of corporates is a bit slow at the moment. But yeah, and then the mobile side, fairly positive performance on that side.
But one looks at the three big gorillas in South African telecommunications, or three of the big gorillas. You look at MTN and Vodacom, and one then looks also at Telkom, and one wonders where the growth is going to come from for these companies. We've got a very saturated mobile market, one of the most active mobile markets in the world. The fiber provision from Rain, Michael Udan and Paul Harris's business, and so many other providers, is a huge competitive sort of hurdle for the existing players. Yeah, are we going to see much growth here? Do we see price wars? Do we see that kind of pressure, or is that just wishful thinking?
Yeah, Bruce, look, I think, you know, with all these telecommunication providers, they've got huge CapEx spends to maintain the infrastructure that's required, you know, for the continuous growth in speed and technology. So I think on that side, you know, one has to be concerned where these companies spend their money and if they are going to be able to grow. But on the other side, we've seen fantastic growth in data and data usage and smartphone usage now, even at the lower end. You know, and I think one has to look at the deal that Blue Telecom has just done with Cell C. I mean, there must be a reason why they're buying that company. I mean, they must anticipate some sort of growth or some way to enhance the earnings from that business. So not just rely on the infrastructure, but probably create a services business around that infrastructure.
And then finally, Tsogo-san came out with an update this afternoon. We've seen Sun International under huge pressure. Is Tsogo-san holding up any better?
I actually missed that update, Bruce, but I imagine, you know, the environment is still tough out there for Tsogo. You know, I've been looking, following the reports on Sun International quite closely, and that business is, you know, struggling in the local economy. People don't have the disposable income that they've got, and so a difficult environment.
I mean, is there any sector at the moment that's actually going to be positive for 2018? I know it's early to be calling it, but you just look at the environment in which we're in. The South African companies, or companies focused on South Africa, are really, really struggling. Big foreign shareholder sell-offs. If you're going to invest in the Rand hedge counters, they're massively expensive. There's a risk if the politics goes well in December that suddenly the Rand starts strengthening and we get a bounce back in South African domiciled companies and a pullback in the expensive Rand hedges. It's a really difficult place to position oneself right now.
Yeah, it is a difficult place, Bruce, but I think you need to bring it back down to the valuation and what's priced into these stocks. You know, a lot of these locally based companies have seen hugely negative sentiment for probably more than a year now. So on a valuation basis, probably not looking so bad at current levels. You know, when we chat to clients, we obviously advocate a diversified portfolio, and you know, you're not just betting all your chips in one particular sector.
That's the best advice anybody can get, quite frankly. Our market commentator this evening, Andrew Bryson. He's a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. The show brought to you by Old Mutual, a licensed financial services provider. Today's the day. Get great financial advice. Do great things. Welcome to the Money Show. Says Anonymous. I wouldn't exactly call Telkom the poster child of all parastatals. Major operational issues, all the hollowing out of key functions, pumping them all out to BCX, etc. I'm talking about financial performance. I'm talking about streamlining a clunky and failing parastatal and turning it into a viable business. That is the poster child I'm talking about. I'm not a big fan of Telkom service either. I've received some terribly mean SMSs, wrongly sent as well, from debt collectors saying I owed the money, which I didn't. And so, yes, one gets very cross about these things. And I agree with you. Operationally, there are some deficiencies. However, if you compare the profitability and the way in which it is run and the streamlining and the efficiency of Telkom relative to the parastatal that's been sold to bail out, I'm afraid there isn't an argument on that one. There really isn't. On the next Money Show, our Make Money Mondays guest is the country's estate agent, Samuel Seif. Also, Alexander Parker, our business book feature with a book that he's co-authored called 50 People Who Messed Up the World, hot on the heels of 50 People Who Messed Up South Africa. Hopefully he doesn't mess up. On the next Money Show. Time for the best bits on The Money Show on a Friday night. What we like to do is look at what you've looked at online, because so many of the interviews we do are turned by Kabosa into stories, and we post those on Facebook and we post those online, and you get to read them and you give us a very good sense about what it is that you're interested in. And so thank you for reading, and thank you for your comments, and thank you for your feedback on all of the stuff that we do on The Money Show. And mostly, thank you also for listening to the podcasts. We do appreciate that. Do share the podcast with your friends. Tell them that they can find them either via our website. You can go and subscribe to the Money Show podcast, or you can simply do it via the App Store. You can go wherever you get your podcasts normally, and you'll find the Money Show podcast tucked away in there. And we'd like you to do it. And if you hear something this evening, you go, oh, I'd like to hear the rest of that, then go and listen to our podcast. There really is a lovely way to play catch up. Another week and another book on the Zoom administration. This week saw the book Enemy of the People hit the shelves, and it was the latest in a round of books which are very critical of the Zoom administration and the way in which the country has been allowed to slide into chaos. It comes hard on the heels of Jacques Poe's The President's Keepers, both featuring the collapse of political morality in South Africa, and we'll all face the consequences of this for years to come. The Jacques Poe book has faced very clumsy attempts to ban it. Threats of criminal charges abounding. The sales of physical books, really, again, trying to get hold of those physical books has proved an impossibility, because through the bully boy tactics of the State Security Agency, it led to a mad rush of people desperate to get hold of physical copies of the books, and the publishers weren't anticipating that Christmas was going to come 6 weeks early for them this year. So they ran out. And so you could download the book from Amazon.com and from the digital bookstores. But if you missed out on that, you might have received a PDF of the book. Now, that's a portable document format, for those of you who don't know. A PDF. And it means that you would have got it for nothing. You would have got it in your WhatsApp group, and you would have gone, oh, I've got the book, I don't have to pay. How nice. And you would have said, I'm going to read it at my leisure on my mobile device. Well, Professor Dion Rousseau, and chief executive at the Ethics Institute, we gave him a call earlier this week, say, should people really be sharing these PDFs of Jacques Poe's book?
I think it's very important that we understand that the intellectual property of authors and the rights of publishers should be protected. Because if it isn't protected, then these authors and publishers will soon be out of business. And therefore, I agree that I don't think there's any ethical justification at the moment, and let me add that, at the moment, to distribute PDF copies of the book. As long as the book is still in print, as long as it can be ordered from Amazon or other platforms, there's absolutely no ethical justification for doing that.
But what if I can't afford the book? What happens if I wouldn't have read the book anyway because I couldn't afford to buy it? And I'm seeing some justification like that online tonight, as people SMS me and say, I'm reading this book, I couldn't afford to buy it, but now at least I'm being informed.
I think there are two situations in which one can start looking differently at it. The one case is where people can't afford it. And it's interesting that someone like Jacques Poe himself said, if you really can't afford it, go ahead, read it, you have my blessing. But it's important that you must then really be in that position.
Yep.
and not be a well-off person who all of a sudden claim that you simply can't afford buying the book, but you can afford many other things. That would be plainly intellectually dishonest.
That is the good Professor Dion Rousseau, who's chief executive of the Ethics Institute. If we win the 2023 Rugby World Cup bid next week, and we are the favoured country right now, we've got the support of New Zealand, expect lots more money to be spent on infrastructure, lots more money to be spent on expanding probably the international departures and arrivals area at Cape Town International. Even OR Tambo is beginning to creak a little bit at the seams, although it's got more growth capacity built into it than Cape Town did when the airports were developed for the World Cup in 2010. We had the chief executive of the airports company South Africa, Bongani Maseko, in studio on Tuesday. The science of the airport. And he deciphered airports tax for us. This is what he said.
We have a user pay principle. So if we have a spike in infrastructure built, We take the risk whilst that build is happening, and we can only assess a tariff once that infrastructure has been brought into use. So for the first time, we had a 17 billion rand infrastructure build program. And that's when our tariffs were supposed to increase by 133%. Naturally, whilst there was a holiday, everybody was happy. When the increase came through, everybody was upset. I am happy to report today that with the 35% decrease, when you fly down to Cape Town, the amount of money that you pay to AXA directly is 82 rand. When you fly internationally, the amount of money that comes directly to AXA is about 230 something odd rand.
And with increases in the number of, you're getting the benefit of volumes coming through, which is good. Are you building up your coffers in order for the next big build, or is that going to be done on the same sort of basis?
We are building up our coffers. And we have applied for a tariff that is pretty much CPI related. So it's around 5.9% over the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. So we're not going to expect the spikes that we saw leading up to 2010. Unfortunately, OR Tambo is sitting at a capacity of about 20 million passengers, sitting at currently usage of about 20 million passengers. It's got a capacity of anywhere between 28 and 30 million.
So there's still capacity.
There's still capacity. Cape Town is just over 10 million, projected at 11 million this year, and it has a capacity of 15 million. But I did say that on the international side, we're probably going to have to do something and do quite
I mean, that international area seemed so big when it was first built, and suddenly it gets very congested.
Yes, it gets very, very small, and especially if they're processing inefficiencies, it gets even smaller.
That is the chief executive of the Airports Company South Africa, Bongani Maseko. Learned a lot from him on Tuesday night about the inner workings of the airports business. Hasta la Gupta, baby. That's the title of Zapiro's latest annual. And Jonathan Shapiro was our Make Money Mondays special edition guest. And when you look at somebody who's made a success of their career, you often don't think about the dark days, the difficult days, the days where they were jobbing to survive. We heard some lovely stories about the early days of him trying to sell his drawings.
The very first cartoon, I can't remember how many rands it was, but it was a few. But it was when I was a kid. I was like 10 years old, and my cousin came into my room and saw 4 Peanuts posters that I don't. You couldn't buy the stuff the way you can now. You just didn't. So I loved Peanuts, and I made my own 4 posters of the 4 main characters in Peanuts, and I had them up on my wall. They're quite big, you know, A2 and all carefully done colored one. And there's, I want one of those. I said, well, I don't know. And she said, I'll buy them. I'll buy them. How much would you anyway? So I think I got 20 rand. For each person. And then her friends started.
Have rates improved since then?
No, but you know what's funny? Like then I was like 10 years old. I got like 20 rand or something like that. No, maybe it wasn't as much as 20 rand. Maybe it was like 10 rand.
Look, when you were 10 bucks was a lot of money.
Yeah. But when I was already an adult and starting to do serious cartoons, I'd already done about 3 years of doing cartoons for organizations, United Democratic Front and various others in conscription campaign, various grassroots, this, that, and the other. I then submitted 2 cartoons to the Weekly Mail, where Derek Bauer was the incumbent and doing great, powerful cartoons. But I knew I had something that I really wanted to test it out. So I sent these 2 cartoons of PW. One was the finger as a smoking gun, which is a strong image.
It is.
And one was PW again with his finger up, and then the hand of God, like a big hand of God.
That one.
No, these 2. So the end of 85, I submitted them to Anton Harbour and Erwin Menoyim. They said we love them, we'd like to publish them. I said fantastic. They paid me 20 rand less EAYE. So I got 15 rand for each of them. And that was, you know, many years after getting sort of reasonably paid for my Peanuts rip-off cartoons.
So you got paid Peanuts.
I got paid Peanuts by the
Weekly Mail. Oh, my goodness. I don't think things have changed very much. No, I really don't. Jonathan Shapiro, otherwise and better known as Zapiro, cartoonist extraordinaire, dodging every question I had about money, but it was still a lovely chat. If you missed that or any of the other best bits of The Money Show this week, you can get them via our podcast. We upload it each and every single day. And there's a whole library of historical interviews for you to delve into.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Time for the Brutal Biz Quiz. On a Friday night, I've got 2,000 Rand up for grabs if you'd like to play and stand a chance to be the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening. Have some fun with us. Come and play. See whether or not you've been paying enough attention this week. Ooh, and there's a very fresh question on the list as well. 021-446-0567 011-883-0702 to play tonight's Brutal Biz Quiz. If you're Irish, how do you spell whiskey? Well, even if you're not Irish, actually. How would the Irish spell whiskey, which forces you to spell whiskey the way they do? How do you spell Irish for whiskey or whiskey in Irish? You know what I mean. 011-883-0702. 011-883-0702. 021-446-0567.
At Cape Talk, we strive to serve all our listeners. To protect you, we adhere to the Broadcasting Complaints Commission's Code of Conduct. Cape Talk is committed to giving you accurate news, fair comment, and balanced programming which represents a diversity of views. We ask if in any way we're not living up to this code, you direct a complaint in writing to the Broadcasting Complaints Commission. Email bccsa@nabsa.co.za. For more, visit bccsa.co.za.
This feature is brought to you by Nedbank's WholeView Business Banking, where a simple change in approach can help your business achieve greatness. See money differently. Nedbank.
We've been asking entrepreneurs to send us their business questions so that Nedbank can give you a deeper understanding of business and how to take yours further. This week, the question, what is the economic growth forecast and how does it impact on business? So to get that answer, we went to the Nedbank economist, Busi Siwe Khadebe.
Businesses don't work in a vacuum. We know that last year, the South African economy only grew at 0.3%. If this economy was going with all cylinders firing, it would probably be growing at 5%. What this tells you as a business is that you're probably not going to get that foot traffic that you want. So what do you do in a time like this? Well, there are three things you can do. The first one is you can differentiate yourself from your competitors. The way you can differentiate yourself is to give your customer great service. The second thing you can do is to market your business. All we're talking about is using new technologies like Facebook, like Twitter. The third thing you can do is to say, you know what, I'm going to keep myself informed about what's happening with politics and what's happening with this country's economy. That way, when your customer comes in, you give them that value-added service and you're understanding where they come from.
With WholeView Business Banking, each part of your business works in harmony to achieve greatness. Email business@nedbank.co.za. See money differently.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Brutal Biz Quiz time now. Let us get you to play the Biz Quiz tonight. Celeste, how would the Irish spell whiskey?
Oh, H-I-S-K-E-Y.
K-E-Y. There's an E in Irish whiskey. We spoke to Michael Cowman, the ambassador of Irish Pot Stills of Middleton, and the Whiskey and Spirits live event this week. Lots of interesting facts and figures on Irish whiskey. This is slightly trickier, Celeste, and it's fresh out of Eyewitness News at 6:30 with the breaking news. What do the letters HSBC stand for?
Oh.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Celeste. You don't know, do you? No, you don't. Sorry about that. So HSBC, what do they stand for? Lera Deng?
Yes.
HSBC, what does it stand for, Lera Deng?
Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corp.
Hong Kong and Shanghai Corporation. Banking Corporation, absolutely right. And HSBC, just this evening, has told us that they have closed accounts linked to the Gupta family. They say they've got no direct business ties with the Gupta family, but they say they've used the language of associated front companies. They've closed what they can, and they talked about this. The company is seeking to launder money. It's a very strong statement out of HSBC tonight. Now, which residence of the late Nelson Mandela is set to be transformed into a brand new tourism product?
Sorry, can I get the question again?
Which residence of the late President Nelson Mandela is to be transformed into a tourism product?
The Houghton Residence.
The Houghton Residence, absolutely right. Tebe Tourism Group and the Nelson Mandela Foundation getting together to do precisely that. What does PDF stand for?
PDF.
In three.
It's dense.
And two. And one. Sorry, Lera Deng. Thank you very much indeed. You've got to be quicker off the mark, I'm afraid. We've got to be brutal about this. It is the brutal biz quiz, not Bruce's friendly, lovely, soft and fluffy biz quiz. Come back with an answer, please, for that one on PDF. I gave it away a moment ago on purpose because I didn't know it either.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
What does PDF stand for, Lefa?
It stands for Portable Document Format, Bruce.
You're a nerd, Lefa, but I like it. Thank you. Author Jacques Poe's book, widely distributed on PDF. Don't read it. Zapiro's real name, what is it?
Which one?
Zapiro. He's got a real name. What did his mum and dad christen him?
Oh, Mr. Zapiro.
In three, and two, and one. Mohammed.